This is the Truth Hurts program.
Everything is racist. Everything is racist according to me.
Yes, indeedy. Everything is racist according to Jane Fonda. Jane Fonda went on television to promote a new movie, 80 for Brady, about four old women who have nothing much left to live for, who decide to buy four tickets to the Super Bowl and go out and act like four elderly whores. I have no desire to see this movie, not even a little bit, especially given the fact that Jane Fonda is one of the stars of this movie. The overrated, progressive, liberal, woke leftist went on television, not just to promote her stupid movie, but to promote the lie, the hype, the BS, that somehow, some way, the white man is responsible for all of planet Earth's ills. The plastic surgery queen, the old hag, went on the Kelly Clarkson Show, a not very highly rated afternoon variety and talk show, to push her agenda, claiming that indeed everything is racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, whatever. And it's all the white man's fault. She appeared with her 80 for Brady movie co-stars, the washed-up Lily Tomlin, the never-relevant Rita Moreno, and the quintessential Sally Field on a talk show where the gals were asked to reflect on what motivated them to all suddenly become involved in social issues. Fonda said,
"Well, you know, you can take anything. Sexism, racism, misogyny, homophobia, whatever, the war. And if you really get into it and study it and learn about it and the history of it, everything's connected. There'd be no climate crisis if it wasn't for racism."
Rita Moreno gave her a look and asked for Fonda to explain, and Fonda replied,
"Where would they put all the shit? Where would they put the poison and the pollution? They're not going to put it in Bel Air. They've got to find some place where poor people or indigenous people or people of color are living."
Now, Fonda is worth an estimated $200 million. You know they're not putting it in her backyard. That's for sure. She says,
"They put it over there. They can't fight back. And that's why a big part of the climate movement now has to do with climate justice."
There's that J word again. It's funny. There's no justice for white people, ever. But Hanoi Jane, with her history of activism, who has caused most knowledgeable people with military backgrounds to despise her, she's 85 years old, and she is an absolute witch. She's got $200 million. I wonder what she's actually done with her own money to fight so-called racism, bigotry, homophobia, misogyny, climate change. Probably nothing. She sits back, collects her millions and her royalties, and then likes to just point fingers at someone else. Because, according to Fonda,
"I pledge allegiance to the fascist United States universities. To mute all the buzzwords that make me sad. One day we'll silence them all, and liberty will be flushed down the toilet. Everything is racist.
Yes, according to pro-progressive, liberal, woke Jane Fonda and her kind, everything is racist in 2023. Except, of course, black people. They can't be racist. Brown people can't be racist. Indigenous people can't be racist. And apparently, white, lesbian, pro-communist people can't be racist. But if you're going to label me, a Christian conservative heterosexual white guy, as a racist, you better look in the mirror, because in my opinion and the opinion of the common sense, intelligent thinking crowd in America, everyone's a little bit racist, somehow.
You're a little bit racist.
Well, you're a little bit too.
I guess we're both a little bit racist.
Admitting it is not an easy thing to do.
But I guess it's true.
Between me and you, I think
everyone's a little bit racist sometimes. Doesn't mean we go around committing hate crimes. Look around and you will find
no one's really colorblind. Maybe it's a fact we all should face. Everyone makes judgments based on race.
Now, The Hill writes, The Sneetches, Dr. Seuss' book. What the Sneetches can teach us about the battle against wokeness. This article was written by Frederick Vars, and it starts, It is unusual for story time in a third grade class to make national news. But that's what happened recently in Ohio. For an episode about teaching economics through children's books, the Planet Money podcast was recording in the classroom. Early into The Sneetches, a book by Dr. Seuss, which you may recall features snooty yellow creatures with stars on their bellies, one student, a third grader, drew a parallel to what they call racial discrimination. A representative of the school district abruptly ended the reading. The first reaction to the story was, of course, horror. Many people have loved The Sneetches since childhood. Reading the book out loud to your own children inspire many parents. More importantly, you should fear what this means as an educator. If The Sneetches is off limits, then what the hell isn't off limits? Can we no longer talk about race at all in a classroom? Now look, I don't blame the school district for stopping the reading. After all, in classrooms across our nation, the danger posed by lessons about race is existential. A bill introduced last year in the state of Ohio would have banned elementary schools from teaching what they called divisive concepts on matters of race and sex. The penalty for violations includes losing state funding. The Ohio bill failed, but the school district reasonably might have believed that a public misstep in a case such as this could give such a bill new momentum. Comparable bills have passed in 10 states since 2021, and more than 100 such bills were introduced in 33 states last year. Some of these bills cover higher education. Some include sexual orientation and sexual identity. This incident shows that the bills don't even have to pass to prompt rational self-censorship. You see, The Sneetches probably does include at least one divisive concept, the idea that individuals, by virtue of their race, are inherently racist. As soon as the student, a third grader, drew the connection to race, the initially high-status, star-bellied Sneetches were somehow labeled inherently racist. Ironically, what the third-grade class did not hear, how, in the end, the Sneetches learned to ignore the differences of appearance. They stopped the story before the lesson could be taught. Of course, this is not the first irony involving Dr. Seuss's The Sneetches. The book had been part of an anti-racism curriculum for children, but was dropped after research showed that Dr. Seuss, Theodore Seuss Geisel, was himself possibly racist. With respect to The Sneetches in particular, scholars criticize the fact that The Sneetches without stars on their bellies accept the unjust social hierarchy by lamenting their fate and then buying their own stars. They should reject a hierarchy. Also considered problematic is the naively colorblind resolution that fails to acknowledge a legacy of so-called inequality. Conservatives properly and rightly mock these criticisms as part of the cancel culture wokeness movement, and they even defend The Sneetches. While other conservatives were pushing for censorship laws to effectively prohibit the book in schools, in other words, The Sneetches is too radical for some, not radical enough for others. Conservative legislators may not have intended to ban The Sneetches, but their broad, vague, and highly punitive censorship laws predictably foreclose nearly all discussions of race. The divisive concept bills pushed education so far to the right, they end up circling all the way around to effectively ban books that even the right agrees with. Teaching about race is often complicated and uncomfortable. Even a seemingly simple children's book like The Sneetches now has lawyers and layers of potential meanings being called into question, including positive and negative messages. Censorship is not the answer. We need more conversations about race without all of the BS associated with the lie that somehow only white people, you know, those with stars on our bellies, could possibly be racist. Racism goes both ways. Or always, because I've heard black people using profanity, derogatory terms for white people for as many years as I've heard black people called the N-word that rhymes with bigger. Of course, in today's progressive, leftist, liberal, woke society, all whites are inherently labeled as racist, whether they are or not. It doesn't matter if a white guy's married to a black woman, because some black person will say he only married her so he could own himself a black slave. Of course, that could not be further from the truth. Just in the same instance that we now have just about every major city run by a black person, or have the police chief be a black person, just to check mark in a box for some social justice game of catch up. In other words, we didn't have black leaders for so long, let's make everyone a black leader. And then when the black leaders fail, and fail miserably, as they have running many of our Democrat cities, we'll still find some kind of way of blaming white man, blaming Trump, blaming conservatives, blaming so-called inherent racism.
Everyone's a little bit racist today. So everyone's a little bit racist, okay. Ethnic jokes might be uncouth, but no act because they're based on truth. Don't take them as personal attacks. Everyone enjoys them, so relax.
Yeah, well, maybe not everyone, but a whole bunch of people. I've heard black people telling white people jokes and Asian jokes and Native American jokes and Jewish jokes, but that's okay because supposedly the black man is so oppressed that he gets a pass. He gets entitled to go ahead and do racist things. This is the Truth Hurts program. Case in point, Raphael Warnock, the guy who literally cheated his way into the U.S. Senate, has just bought a $1.1 million home in Washington, D.C. This as allegations of church-sanctioned evictions resurface. Old Democrat black man, Senator Raphael Warnock, has been accused of being a greedy slumlord who looks the other way when his church evicted low-income brown and black-skinned tenants from apartments that he owns. Just bought a $1.1 million home for himself in a swanky Washington, D.C. neighborhood. Barnini Chakraborty in the Washington Examiner writes, "This 1,700-square-foot townhouse features 4 bedrooms, 3.5 bathrooms, and a newly updated gourmet kitchen with a wine fridge and outdoor seating." Warnock, you know, is the senior pastor at the famous Ebenezer Baptist Church in Atlanta, Georgia. He closed the sale on January 4th, according to Realtor.com. He also owns a 3,000-square-foot home in Atlanta worth just shy of $750,000. Now, while Raphael Warnock's Washington digs, less than 2 miles from the U.S. Capitol, is on the modest side compared to a few others in the area, it does draw attention to the scandal that was brought up repeatedly during the general election and his runoff race against GOP challenger Herschel Walker. You might recall the ads from the Super PAC, which focused on Warnock and his church for kicking out black residents who were just $30 behind in their back rent. The Ebenezer Baptist Church is a 99% owner of the Columbia Tower at Milk Village. I'm sorry, MLK Village. You know, Martin Luther King Village. It's been described as a place for the chronically homeless and those trying to cope with mental disabilities. As those black and brown skin residents were being evicted, Warnock was given a generous $7,500 monthly housing allowance. Of course, he's pushing back on the allegations. He likens the criticism to an attack on the Church of Jesus Christ and says people were motivated by the rulers of the darkness of this world. Calls to Warnock, calls to the Ebenezer Baptist Church have gone unanswered because, you know, we wouldn't want him to have to answer for his crimes against humanity. Whoo, folks, the double standard, the hype, the hypocrisy is unbelievable. Speaking of stinky, smelly Democratic politicians, Democrats' already ugly California Senate fight has taken yet another ugly turn. beady-eyed little Adam Schiff, Democrat of California, announced that he is entering the fray for the still-filled Senate seat currently occupied by Dianne Feinstein. Adam Schiff, who Speaker Kevin McCarthy recently removed from his post on the powerful Intelligence Committee in the House of Representatives, is now the second Democrat to announce that they are running for the very Democratic Party safe California seat. Katie Porter started the battle for the seat when she announced her campaign last week. Schiff tweeted the usual Democratic Party lie that our democracy is at great risk because GOP leaders care more about power than anything else, and because our economy isn't working for the millions of hardworking Americans. We're in the fight of our lives, a fight I'm ready to lead as California's next U.S. Senator. Let me dissect that for you. Our democracy is and has been at great risk since the Democratic Party launched attacks against a sitting President Donald Trump and spent 4 years trying to undermine what made America great again. GOP leaders do not care more about power than anything else. They tried desperately to get back into power to rein in the Democratic Party, Mr. Schiff. And it's the Democrats who care for nothing but power. And that's why they are leading the effort to import millions of illegal, criminal, law-breaking, trespassing invaders across the Mexican border and plant them in Republican strongholds so that they will start voting Democrat and give the Democratic Party an endless stream of power for decades to come. Schiff is a career politician, 16 years in the House of Representatives. He's considered a centrist by his party, but we all know he's a progressive woke liberal. He has faced criticism from Republicans during his tenure as the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. The name should say it all. He doesn't have the intelligence to be on that committee. Of course, his announcement comes after months of speculation that he would run, given his steady gathering of campaign contributions, and especially after McCarthy properly, rightfully, and legally kicked him off of the House Intelligence Committee. There's nothing wrong with him being kicked off of the House Intelligence Committee. The man has been accused, and properly accused, by Mike Pompeo that he leaked classified information from that committee. Of course, Schiff adamantly denies that. Schiff said on a press conference Wednesday with Eric Swalwell and Ilhan Omar, targets of committee removals, that the speaker will regret giving them more free time. Oh, you can go run. Let him go to the Senate. Good for you. The 89-year-old Dianne Feinstein says she's going to make a decision on whether or not she will run for re-election in the next few months. But regardless if she runs or not, it is possible that more representatives in the House might seek to jump over to the Senate race. We'll have to see. Adam Schiff is dangerous. He's dangerous for the United States of America, and the people of California, apparently too stupid to be able to see it. Speaking of Democrats running for office, gropey Joe Biden and Vice President Camel Toe Harris are planning a spree of fundraisers ahead of an still expected 2024 announcement. Gropey Joe and Camel Toe will attend high-level fundraisers in New York City and Philadelphia next week, kicking off a spree of fundraising efforts ahead of an expected announcement for the 2024 presidential re-election. Biden and the Democratic National Committee, DNC, which is also dilation and curettage, you know, the abortion thing, will host the New York City fundraiser. Harris will then join Biden for the Philadelphia event. The source says Biden and Harris will hold larger and frequent fundraisers in March and in April, even though Biden has yet to formally announce his candidacy. He and top White House officials still say he intends to run, despite all of this document scandal, immigration scandal, crime wave, inflation, recession, high interest rates, disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan, failed foreign policy. The president is honoring his promise to respect the independence of the Justice Department and divorce himself from politics in the matter of these classified documents he is illegally in possession of. I'm telling you, folks, it's getting nasty. Everyone says, well, gee, yeah, Donald Trump lost, and you won't have anything to talk about now that Biden's a president. Well, that was 2 years ago. Now we're into year three of Biden's disaster, and I have more content to speak about on the Truth Hurts program than anyone ever could have dreamed possible. Then the midterm elections came. The Great Red Wave was predicted, and I warned you all, if you don't get out and vote, if you don't push your conservative friends, co-workers, relatives, neighbors to go out and vote, this lie known as the Great Red Tsunami was not going to happen. And I was right. And you have no one to blame but yourself if you stayed on the couch and did not vote in the midterms. You have only you to blame. Now they're saying, well, the midterms are over. It wasn't a great red wave, Steve, so you're going to have not much to talk about. Surprise! Is it my birthday? Tell me it's my birthday. We got the Biden document debacle. This disaster. And the media, like they always do, tries to soften the blow for the Democrat while still trying to pile on against the Republican who supposedly did the same thing. I'm not going to go into detail again about how Trump was the president and had the authority to have those documents and to declassify those documents, and Biden stole his documents when he was a senator and a vice president and had no authority to declassify them. I'm not going to go into intimate detail about the lawyers that were allowed to rummage through those boxes of classified documents despite not having security clearance to be able to do so. Nope, not going to talk about the double standard of the media reporting. Not going to talk about it. We have spent the last 4 days going into intimate detail about that subject. I'm going to talk about other stuff, my friends, like catalytic converter theft. Do you know the 10 vehicles that thieves target the most? You know the catalytic converter, that pollution control device attached to your vehicle's exhaust system? Thieves get under your car with a battery-operated Sawzall, an electric saw, and in the darkness of night, like many thieves will do, they go out and they cut out the catalytic converter. What's the biggest clue that your cat converter may have been stolen? Well, how about an excessive amount of engine noise and noxious fumes coming from under your car? They have something precious in them. Three precious metals, palladium, rhodium, and platinum. How precious are we talking about? At the time of this writing, today, an ounce of rhodium costs $15,000. Compare that to gold, in which an ounce costs $1,800. Think about how much money can be stolen from your car. You thought your car was just a car. It's a gold mine, or a platinum mine, or a rhodium mine. So, for your listening pleasure, if you operate a 2001 through 2021 Toyota Prius, you know, the electric gasoline hybrid, those are number 10 on the list of vehicles with the most stolen catalytic converters. Coming in at number 9, the 2011 through 2017 Chrysler 200. Number 8 is the 1987 through 2019 Toyota Camry. Number 7 on the list of most stolen catalytic converters, 97 through 2020 Honda CR-V. Next, 2005 through 2021 Chevrolet Equinox, followed by the 1999 through 2021 Chevrolet Silverado. Number 4 on our list is Ford Econoline or E-Series full-size vans from 1990 through 2022, because they're easy to slide under since they're high off the ground, and those catalytic converters can fetch anywhere from $50 to $250 each. Now consider this, a fast-working thief only needs a few short minutes to steal one. But if he goes to a business that has a bunch of delivery vans, passenger vans, let's say your local Baptist church has 3 or 4 vans, and he can haul in $250 per catalytic converter, in about 15 minutes' time, a thief can wipe out a church of 4 vans and bring home $1,000, which to a thief is a lot of money. Number 3 on our list, the Jeep Patriot between 2007-2017, easy to get to, easy to steal. 1989 through 2020 Honda Accords, extremely popular for stolen catalytic converters. It only takes a few minutes with a small reciprocating saw. And the number 1 most stolen catalytic converter in America, the 1985 through 2021 Ford F-Series gasoline-powered pickup truck. The number 1 selling truck in history. It should come as no surprise that the best-selling vehicle in North America is the one most commonly targeted by crooks seeking to steal catalytic converters. With millions of these on the road, there's no shortage of them sitting on driveways, parking lots, in parking garages, or home garages around the country. The purely logistical reason that it is a common target is the simple fact that it sits higher off the road, which means it's easier and quicker for a thief to slide under it and steal the catalytic converter. Now, why am I telling you this? Because crime, including theft of vehicles and catalytic converters, has risen exponentially in the 2 years that Joe Biden has been your president. All right, let me switch gears and talk to you about California again. Gavin Newsom's COVID authoritarianism is just the beginning of his planned socialist takeover, and he wants to be the president. Gavin Newsom and his Democratic Party's authoritarianism extends far beyond those draconian lockdowns that ruined the lives of millions and destroyed businesses and the economy. Democrats are proving it in the state of California. Last year, California passed a law that punishes doctors for spreading what they think is misinformation or disinformation about COVID. Misinformation is defined as false information that is contradicted by some contemporary scientific consensus contrary to the standard of care. The contemporary scientific consensus is, of course, to be determined by the Democrats at a later date. The state's deputy attorney general told a judge, can't be defined at this time. As senior judge William Shub said during a hearing on the law, the definition of misinformation is nonsense. As for contemporary scientific consensus, the pandemic proved that the contemporary scientific consensus was often wrong, incorrect, manufactured, made up, a lie. The consensus on the efficacy of masks, for example, or school closures, or mask mandates, or even vaccines that were supposed to prevent the transmission of COVID, have all been wrong at one point or another, amongst other issues, of course, that arose during the pandemic. The state of California wants to implement a vague standard of punishment for doctors who, quote, do not trust the science, unquote, even as the science is constantly evolving. Never mind that challenging the scientific consensus is how breakthroughs are achieved or how people become better informed. Remember Galileo? He challenged the scientific consensus as well. Do they aim to emulate his persecutors? If this law in California is allowed to stand, it will not stop COVID or its spread. The state will crack down on doctors and mental health professionals who defy the so-called contemporary scientific consensus. Much in the same way they claim that children suffering from so-called gender dysphoria should be irreversibly surgically mutilated and pushed into hormone replacement therapy. That's what your science is telling you in California. If the state can't find a profession to punish for questioning this so-called contemporary scientific consensus about climate change, it will likely extend to censorship of that industry as well. As California continues to experience regular rolling blackouts as it rejects nuclear energy and pushes coal, oil, and natural gas out of the state altogether, it's rather embarrassing to the idiots who run the state now, isn't it? It's far more convenient to silence dissident voices speaking up for nuclear. This law would provide a precedent and a basis for doing such a thing, silencing contemporary science. The state's COVID disinformation law is an assault on the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. It's an assault on free speech. It is an assault on free press. It is an assault that is disgraceful on its own. And all of those who supported it should be thrown out of public office today. Now, if this law stands, it will open the floodgates for California Democratic Party people to usher in even more censorship of anyone who defies any of their so-called interpretation of science from a political point of view. COVID may have encouraged politicians and bureaucrats to push for more and more authoritarianism, and it didn't end when the schools and the businesses reopened. That was a very nice article. Zach Faria in the Washington Examiner, thank you for that. Folks, we've run out of time for this edition of the Truth Hurts program with Steve Z. Have a great one. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Truth Hurts program with Steve Z. Opinions expressed are protected free speech under the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I apologize if you were offended, but I retract nothing. Background music by Jason Shaw and Audionautix. This program was pre-recorded.